Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
Clones, yeah. Hope you denimed up, backed it in, and finished strong. Let me lay out today's Daily Jungle. I open up the program with some thoughts on Stevie Franchise. Absolutely amazing piece in the Players Tribune. TV cameras caught Mark Davis and John Gruden in a couple of courtside seats at the Warriors game. And then I circled back on the crime against humanity that was JD and the straight shot on The Tonight Show. Porter Moser, head coach of the Loyola Ramblers, joined me. Mike Jones, the head coach of the Radford Highlanders, on. Ian Rappaport of the NFL Network also got us ready for the start of free agency. All of that and Alvy's week that was. Zorro, get some. Keep this in mind. I'll do it for the right person. However, remember earlier this week when I actually led the show with a take on Allen Iverson? My point was, if AI is in the news, not only will I drop everything to talk about that, I'll open the show with it. No matter what's going on, if Allen Iverson is in the news, I will break format in that regard too.
All right.
Same thing with this guy. In fact, maybe even more for this guy than AI. And when I talk about breaking format, it's not for you, Rex in ABQ. Rex is the guy on hold that wants me to bust open the format for a phone call. Maybe, Rex. Let's see how my opening take goes. It's an incredibly busy day in sports. As I mentioned, Richard Sherman may get released today. Steph Curry is expected to miss at least two games with a sprained ankle. Duke, UNC, meet tonight in the ACC semifinal. Dallas Keuchel took a mini run at the Cubs. I mean, there are so many different places where I could start on this Friday, but I'm not going to start in any of those places. No, instead, I'm going to start with a guy who has not played in the NBA in 10 years. I'm starting with somebody who has not played in the NBA in a decade. Steven Deshaun Francis, a.k.a. Stevie Franchise. Because yesterday, he dropped a Players Tribune piece that wasn't just good, it was incredible. It wasn't just incredible, it was one of the best things I have ever read. I tweeted this last night. This is not an exaggeration. This is not hyperbole. This is straight up one of the greatest things I have ever read. It's one of my favorite pieces ever. Right when you think that there's no way a Stevie Franchise piece could ever live up to the hype, it completely smashes it. In fact, I love this piece so much, I literally thought about doing a dramatic reading of it on the air. I was going to read the thing on air. And if I did, I guarantee that none of you would change the station. Better yet, if you were driving, you would pull over. Or you wouldn't get out of your car until after you were done, even if you had reached your destination. It was that good. You would cancel meetings. You would cancel meals. You would stop everything until I was done reading that thing on the air. That good. So the title of this piece is, I Got a Story to Tell. Hell yes, he does. My man's got stories for days. Some of the best stories that you're ever going to print. And all you need to know is the first two sentences to know that he's about to get nice. Quote, I remember the exact moment when I realized NBA legends weren't bleep. My man Sam Cassell took me out the night before my very first NBA game. And then he tells this amazing story about Sam Cassell, who was with the Bucks at the time. And he takes him out the night before a game, a night on the town, before the Bucks are going to face the Rockets. Franchise's Rockets. These guys are hanging out until 5 a.m. They're having a great time. And Cassell is acting like he's taking Franchise under his wing. He's telling him how it's going to be, what to look out for, what it's going to take to be successful in the association. And then all of a sudden on a dime, Cassell throws a switch and he starts talking junk, mad junk. He's talking about how he's going to annihilate Franchise later that night when they play. They finally leave this club and Francis says, quote, we walk out of this club and the sun is up. I got to be at the arena in like 5 hours. I'm not even drunk. I'm not nothing, end quote. Cassell proceeds to drop 35 on Stevie that night, kills the guy, and Franchise realizes he got played badly. Quote, I'm a punk rookie on a team with Charles Barkley and Hakeem the Dream Olajuwon. These dudes are looking in the huddle, looking at me like I'm not bleep. Rudy T is looking at me like we traded 15 mother bleepers to Vancouver for this. I mean, this dude got played badly by Cassell, who kept him out all night on the premise that he was helping him, when in reality, he was setting him up to destroy him that night on the floor. And that was just the first story. A tiny story at that. Then there are stories of franchise rolling with Hakeem Olajuwon and the Dream buying him 10 cashmere suits because, quote, you walk around dressed like a bus driver, end quote. Then there was the night that franchise lit Gary Payton up as a rookie. The fact that just 4 years before, he was selling crack on a street corner. And that he got his first job at 10 years of age as a phone boy. He describes being a phone boy as waiting for a payphone to ring and then hooking people up on drugs or women or whatever they wanted. And about how he and his friends took the roof off of the phone booth, and that's how he started to play basketball, by throwing a basketball into the top of the phone booth. Hey, quick, what are franchise's high school basketball stats? He doesn't have any because he played 2 high school basketball games, which essentially is the point of the story. The guy played 2 games of basketball in high school, and somehow an AAU coach convinced him to play JUCO ball. He parlayed that into a spot at Maryland. Well, parlayed isn't exactly how he puts it. What he says is he went up against Sean Marion in the JUCO ranks, quote, I murdered him. I got a quadruple double on his ass. And to this day, he admits they still ask Marion, Sean, where's the VHS? I know you've got that tape. Where is the VHS? So then he goes to Maryland. Then he's the 2nd pick in the draft. He goes to Vancouver. Think about that. The Cat played no high school basketball. He ends up at a JUCO. He transfers to Maryland, and he's the 2nd pick in the NBA just a few years after being on a street corner selling crack. It's one of the craziest stories ever. So he's taken 2nd. He goes to Vancouver. Well, not exactly. Quote, I know people in Vancouver are still pissed off at me for forcing a trade out of there. I damn near cried when I got taken by the Grizzlies at 2. I was not about to go up to freezing ass Canada so far away from my family when they were about to move the franchise anyway. I'm sorry, but actually, I'm really not even sorry. End quote. Franchise. Sounds like Conor McGregor. I'm sorry. To absolutely nobody in Vancouver. So the franchise ends up in Houston. He hangs out with the Dream and Chuck. He becomes best friends with Yao. And quote, then they traded my ass to Orlando for Tracy McGrady. And as he said, quote, it's not even worth talking about those Magic years. And it's definitely not worth talking about those Nick years. And then, of course, his career went downhill from there. He went from being a 3-time All-Star, averaging 20 a night, to playing in China pretty quickly. You want to crack this guy for only playing 9 years in the NBA? The fact that this guy played 9 minutes in the NBA is amazing. Again, he barely played high school ball. He still made it to the NBA. And then, yes, in recent years, his life came off the tracks. He owns that too. He said his stepfather died. He lost basketball. He lost his identity. He got lost in the sauce. But he wants to be clear about one thing. Because the internet came for him. The internet lit him up for doing crack. Something that Francis vehemently denies. He says he sold crack. He'll own that. But he never once did crack. And that it broke his heart to know that his grandmother and his kids read on the internet that he did. Bottom line, he seems honest. He doesn't glorify dealing drugs. In fact, he shows how horrendous that life was. He doesn't blame anybody for anything. He's not bitter. In fact, he seems pretty positive. And I'm damn positive. It's one of the best things I've ever read. I didn't want it to end. I know a lot of you are not big into this whole reading thing, but clear some time and read this. It's one of my favorite columns ever. And again, given the legend of Steve Franchise, when I sat down to read that piece, I thought to myself, there is no way this is ever going to be as good as I want it to be, but then it turned out to be 10 times better. Good enough that I could start a Friday show and talk about a piece written by Steve Francis for the Players Tribune. And I gotta admit, I love the franchise. I'm one of those guys who can't get enough of a Steve Francis story. Or a reminder. I'm feeling kind of nostalgic. Clones, let me talk to you for a moment about my new partner, Burrow Furniture. Burrow makes luxury couches for real life. Burrow is the same quality that you would expect from high-end retailers without breaking the bank. Plus, everything is customizable, and Burrow couches are even stain-resistant. So go ahead, eat your dinner on the couch. This couch fears no pizza. And there's a built-in USB charger for when your devices are in the red. Say goodbye to that extra-long charge cord. That's incredible. Better yet, all Burrow furniture is easy to put together and take apart. No tools required, just your bare hands. Enjoy 30 days of naps on your Burrow risk-free. And if for any reason you choose not to keep it, the return process is simple. Go try a Burrow couch for yourself. Order today. It will ship in a jiffy. Use the promo code ROAM at Burrow.com and get $50 off your order. Once again, Burrow.com, offer code Rome. Make sure it's in all caps. That's Burrow. Now it's back to our Daily Jungle. Porter Moser joins me. Porter, good to have you in the jungle. How are you?
I'm great, Jim. Thanks for having me.
Man, it's great to have you, Coach. All right, so you're taking Loyola to the NCAA tournament for the first time in 33 years. I've got to know, what is the mood like around the program and around Chicago right now?
Jim, it's awesome. You know, I'm a Catholic kid from Chicago area, and we said like 7 years ago, can you imagine taking Loyola to the tournament? And it's been just surreal. I just think, you know, Chicago is such a great sports town. And, you know, to have the college basketball team, Northwestern did it last year with Chris, and just captivated the city. And, I mean, the people are coming out of the woodwork, and I'm just so proud of how the former players, the alumni, the student body. It's just been a great experience for everybody.
You know, Porter, I tell the story all the time because I went to a school. I went to UC Santa Barbara, and they're in the Big West, so I understand what it's like when you're not accustomed to going to the tournament and how much it can mean to a program. And as you point out, you're a Catholic kid from Chicago, so it would make sense for you to coach at Loyola. But at the same time, when you took over, that was a team that was struggling in the Horizon League. What did you see in this opportunity and in the program that maybe some other folks didn't see?
Well, two things. I've had two experiences at Jesuit schools. I played my college ball at Creighton, and I saw the education that was at Creighton. I saw and watched that. We were part of a team that won 20 games 3 years in a row for the first time, two NCAA berths, and you watched the trajectory of Creighton went on. Then I was with Rick Majerus at St. Louis, where we recruited great kids because there's a great education there in a metropolitan area. And then I saw Loyola on the lake. The campus is gorgeous. It's right in the lake. They were doing so much advancement on the campus with the building. And I just said, you know, I'm from there. I think Chicago's always been awesome basketball, and it was an opportunity to build it. And going into the Missouri Valley our third year, that was a monster jump. It was a huge jump. So that also, though, it was a huge part of it because the Missouri Valley is ranked eighth in the country. It resonates as a great basketball league with recruits, with coaches, and that also was a huge springboard into trying to get it to where we're off.
Yeah, listen, I want to make sure people understand that. I mean, moving to the Missouri Valley Conference was a monster jump, and maybe there were some questions outside the program as to whether or not that you actually belonged in that conference. So what was that transition like, and then what's it mean to be the MVC champion?
Jim, it's a great observation. I mean, it was a monster jump. And if you look at the programs 5 years ago that moved up a level, not laterally, like Syracuse went lateral and some of those that went up. You're talking about Butler, Final Fours, VCU, Final Fours, Xavier moved up to the Big East, many Elite Eights, Creighton moved up to the Big East, many Elite Eights, Davidson moved up, many, many things. Utah moved up to the Pac-12, they've been in the Final Four. George Mason moved up, they've been in the Final Four. Loyola moved up, three winning seasons in 30 years. The infrastructure and the tradition of winning in recent years just wasn't there moving up to the league. And I got to give so much credit to our university, our athletic department, everything, that they stayed steadfast on, hey, we want to do this the right way, good kids, and they've been super patient. Sometimes you don't see that, but it was a huge transition, you know, going, changing leagues when you just didn't have this huge winning tradition like some of the other basketball schools that moved up a conference.
Porter Moser is the head basketball coach at Loyola University of Chicago. I've got to ask you about a wall in your locker room. It is the wall of culture, and it's got phrases like hands to the light, Ball you, man. Low and leveraged and get out of the mud. One of your guys, Lucas Williamson, said that when he first arrived, he didn't really know what any of that meant. You got to break this down for me. For instance, what does hands to the light mean?
All right. I got to give so much of this to Rick Majerus, because one of the things that I took from him is all these little things of how he taught the game. And Jim, it was kind of an accumulation of all these little things. So I'm going through all my stuff when I took this job of my 4 years with Coach Majerus. And I'm like, you know what? I'm going to put it all on the wall, and just hopefully osmosis, they're going to, you know, make this a part of our culture. And so what hands reach for the lights means is when they're driving the basket, you see so many guys reaching their hands down, trying to block a shot. And referees call that foul all the time. So when you drive, we reach for the lights, trying to go straight up and down. And we were second in the country in fouls, from the fewest fouls. And that was just one of the little things we had to do to sort of not foul. Is reach for the lights. Where if a guy's driving, he's driving in the paint, and he stops, and he kind of fakes, and then he goes up to jump over you. Have your arms straight up. Majerus used to call it, make it a tough two. Don't foul and negate your hustle. And you know, we didn't have a player foul out all year. And we were the second fewest fouls given, and it was just something that kind of resonated with the guys. Driving, reach for the lights.
You know, I was going to ask you about Rick Majerus, Porter, but before I could, you had already mentioned him a few times. You were an assistant under Majerus at St. Louis, but if you go back even further, prior to working for him, you had met him just once when you were an assistant at Texas A&M, and you were exchanging VHS tapes with him at the Maui Classic. What do you remember about that meeting?
I remember him in this huge Utah shirt, T-shirt, and flip-flops. And I remember I knew, obviously everyone knew Rick Majerus. His figure... You know, his, not literally, but his he was a figurehead in our sport that was bigger than life. You know, he had taken Utah to that level. And back then, you had to dub the VHS tapes. It wasn't like you can just download it, pop Synergy, and get it. So we had the late game at Maui. We had to wait to get a copy of the tape. Then we had to dub it for 2 hours. And it was like 2 in the morning, and the operations guy and me were saying, hey, let's change tapes. And lo and behold, Coach is out there at 2 in the morning. I'm this 24, 25-year-old. Young coach, and he starts grilling me on a scouting report that was like as detailed as you can imagine. He's like, so how many times did he go left to right on a high ball? So I'm like, dude, I don't know. I mean, I don't know. That was 45. And he was, I just remember him just quizzing me, and then we got talking for like 30 minutes about the opponent. And I'm like, God, here's a head coach at 2:30 in the morning sitting by the pool, you know, just really trying to get any competitive advantage on scouting that he could get.
So let me ask you this. I mean, you go from there and you have success as a head coach at Arkansas Little Rock, and then you run into a tough situation at Illinois State, and then you're at a crossroads. I mean, you could look for another head coaching job, or you can be an assistant for Majerus. What was it about being an assistant under him that made you interested?
Well, I tell you, you know, God's been good to me. He's got a great plan, and I had to say those words to myself 100 million times the last 10 years. You know, I did have a chance to get a low D1 rebuild after the Illinois State. And I just looked at a coach, and when he called me and we started talking, I'm like, you know what? I could go get a chance to learn. I'm still a young coach. I looked at him as one of the top coaches out there. I go, I'm just going to go learn from him instead of starting another complete rebuild. And it was the best decision, you know, getting with him and learning. Everyone said, oh, coach, he's going to grind you to the ground and how hard he was. That never bothered me. That never bothered me. And my 4 years with him, here's the second thing, Jim, that it really validated. I felt that we were right on track at Illinois State. You know, our fourth year, we had everybody back. We had a whole, you know, the freshman year. And it just, the business took over. It was part of the business. You know, I had a third athletic director. You know, it is what it is. And he validated. Coach was always like, do it with good tips. Do it the right way. Don't cheat. And we, at St. Louis, we recruited. We went 3 straight NCAA tournaments to St. Louis. And then when I got at Loyola, he called and texted and wrote me all the time saying, Porter, take it slow, don't skip steps. And it just validated that there's a right way to do it. Because sometimes when you get a second chance, you feel the anxiety that you're not going to have enough time, and you start skipping steps and you start making bad decisions on the type of kid you take. And just going with him just validated, man, there's a right way to do it. Build your culture with great kids who know how to play, that love to play. And that was one of, that was a huge thing I took from Coach.
You know, Porter, one last thought, because you mentioned this, that you went to Loyola and he would still reach out to you. Fact of the matter is, you took that job in 2011, and the following season, when St. Louis reached the tournament, Majerus called you on Selection Sunday, and then he called you again from the locker room after every game in that tournament. What did he discuss with you in those calls, and then what did that mean to you?
You know, it meant everything, and he just was appreciative. And he called me, and he was just like, hey, he knew how much, you know, time we spent recruiting those guys. He built it with great kids, don't you? And he was appreciative. And he just said thank you. And, you know, and we talked about the guys. We talked about the game. And, you know, it was amazing how close I got with him in those 4 years. And it was something that I'll never forget. I'm like, here he is in the thing, and he's thinking about calling me and just talking like that. It just meant a ton to me.
Clones, I've got to talk to you about my pals at Casper, the only mattress in the Rome household. So what more can I tell you about Casper that I have not already told you? They have affordable prices because Casper cuts out the middleman and sells directly to you. Casper offers hassle-free returns if you're not completely satisfied, delivered right to your door in a small, how do they do that, sized box, and free shipping and returns in the U.S. and Canada both. I own a Casper mattress, and I always will. I will never forget the first night that I slept on my Casper. And I have had an amazing night of sleep every single night since then. And right now, you can be sure of your purchase with Casper's 100-night risk-free sleep on it trial. Try it out for 100 nights, and if you don't love Casper as much as I love mine, they will come and pick it up for free and give you a full refund. Get $50 towards select mattresses by visiting Casper.com and using the promo code JUNGLE at checkout. Once again, promo code JUNGLE at Casper.com to save $50 on select mattresses. Casper.com, terms and conditions do apply. That's Casper. Now it's back to our Daily Jungle. The real commotion of something that did happen happened in Oakland last night. More specifically, it happened at Oracle Arena. And no, it was not Steph Curry injuring his ankle again. No, it was not Kevin Durant going for 37 and 11. It had nothing to do with any of that. It actually had nothing to do with the Warriors. It was all about the Raiders and the fact that Raiders head coach John Gruden and team owner Mark Davis were courtside for that game. TV cameras picked them up and Twitter would not let them go. It started with the usual cracks about Mark's hair, looking like he cut it himself with nail clippers or a spoon, or that he went to Supercuts, or he had a bowl of soup and then put it on his head and just cut around it. But then it transitioned into the similarities between Gruden and Davis. As an example, here's some tweets that I can read as examples. Mago tweets, are Mark Davis and John Gruden related? My God. If you're watching on CBS Sports Network, there's a picture of them side by side. This guy asks, are they related? My God. I mean, yeah, I guess they kind of look alike. But this has been covered so many times before. Let's just keep moving. But there was no way that anybody was just going to move right past that. No way anybody was going to just keep going. In fact, it was only heating up. Don't believe me? Look at this tweet from Jackson Bevins. And I quote, Mark Davis looks like microwaved John Gruden leftovers. All right, pretty inappropriate. Pretty inappropriate and over the line. Personal appearance smack is completely unacceptable. Again, they sort of look alike. They kind of have similar haircuts. But there's no need to be referring to one guy as the other guy's microwaved leftovers. I mean, are you insinuating? I'm trying to even make sense of that. Are you insinuating that if you microwaved Gruden's face for 3 minutes, that you would end up with Davis's face? Is that what you're suggesting? I hope that's not what that dude was reaching for. But that wasn't even the only food comparison. Thoed E tweets, Mark Davis looks like a Caucasian potato with that hair. A Caucasian potato. as opposed to an African-American potato, an Asian-American? What does that even mean, a Caucasian potato? Then there were plenty of other remarks about how he looked like a creamsicle. So the guy's wearing a pale orange top with white pants. You know, like what, a 50-50 bar, a creamsicle? Who cares? Yeah, I know. You're not supposed to wear white after Labor Day. Look, I love the fact that the guy does. I love Mark Davis. I love his look. I love the fact that this guy doesn't give a damn. I love the fact that this guy doesn't follow the supposed rules of fashion or society. You know why? Because that's what icons do. They don't follow rules. They break them. And my man is shattering rules and norms left and right. Let me tell you something. If people followed the rules, we wouldn't have an iPhone or the Tesla or David Bowie or Prince. Humans were not supposed to break the 4-minute mile, and then Roger Bannister came along and broke the rule. We weren't supposed to walk on the moon. Neil Armstrong did that. So skip me with your "you're not supposed to dress like a creamsicle and sit courtside an NBA game" rule. Man, I'm here for the dreamers. I'm here for the revolutionaries. I'm here for the guys that break rules. But there's no respect for that on Twitter, apparently, because it just kept getting worse and worse and worse. And remember, I'm only reading the ones that I can read on air. How about this guy? How far did this guy go? Look at what Humble Teej went with. Humble Teej tweets, and I quote, I want to make very clear that I'm not the one saying this. This is Humble Teej on Twitter. And I quote, "Bruh, Mark Davis is the ugliest person ever. Fam looks like a monster." End of tweet. I'm not sure that I have ever read a tweet like that. Ever. And what you clones, I'm sure, are going to call a masterpiece, I'm going to have to call rude, disrespectful, downright churlish. Look that word up, clones. What the hell is wrong with you? Why can't a guy go to a basketball game without getting brutally destroyed on Twitter? Is it too much to ask that Mark Davis and John Gruden be allowed to watch a sporting event without somebody saying that Davis is, quote, the ugliest person ever? Not the ugliest person online, not the ugliest person on Twitter, not the ugliest person alive. I mean, not even ugly, but the ugliest person ever, and, quote, fam looks like a monster. It's a staff outing. They're trying to enjoy some time away from the office, hanging out, watching two legendary franchises play before they start leading their own legendary franchise. And you all are lighting these dudes on fire. And by the way, do you think about, or do you think that your tweet about Mark Davis looking like he cuts his own hair is the first one of its kind? Do you think he doesn't know that? He knows it, and he still rolls with it, and he's proud as hell of it, and I'm proud of him myself for walking around like that. Hell, I'm all about that cat's lettuce. I could not respect this guy anymore for getting up and leaving the house rocking that cut and that color. This guy's macho. He's not giving in to you or your hate on Twitter. He's doing him, and he's doing it better than anybody else. So what? This guy drives a 97 Dodge Caravan. So what that this guy has an office at P.F. Chang's? So what that he looks like a monster? Or John Gruden being microwaved on high for 3 minutes? He doesn't give a damn about any of that. You know why? Because this guy's running an NFL team and sitting courtside with his famous coach watching the Dubs. What are you doing besides saying that fam is the ugliest dude ever and looks like a monster? What are you doing? You're on Twitter killing this guy when he's in the arena killing life. Think about that, fam. I'll give you something else to think about. I'll give you something else to think about. There are no ugly people. Just ugly tweets. Let me repeat that. There are no ugly people, only ugly tweets, fam. Lots and lots of ugly tweets. Dude is the ugliest guy ever. Fam looks like a monster. We are joined right now, starting off hour number two, by the head basketball coach at Radford. He's in his seventh season there, the Big South Conference Coach of the Year, Radford, 22-12. They're going to the NCAA tournament for the first time since 2009. Their head coach is Mike Jones. He joins us right now. Mike, good morning. Great to have you on. How are you?
Hey, good morning. Is this the real Jim Rome?
My man, it is. That's is this awesome. The real Mike Jones?
That's awesome.
That's right. Awesome, yes, Mike. It is great to talk to you. Great to meet you, Mike. Nice to have you on. I'm anxious to talk to you about your tournament and your program. You beat Liberty 55-52 in the Big South Conference tourney on a buzzer beater, and you called a timeout, Mike, with 13 seconds left to set up the final play. The moment's already become legendary in Radford history, but there is a little bit of a story behind it. What was the play that you designed, and then what actually happened?
Well, as in a lot of those situations, it doesn't exactly go according to plan. Certainly, we wanted the ball in the hands of Carly Jones, who was our redshirt freshman. He had, you know, delivered for us early in the year, and you know, just had the temperament to handle those kind of situations. And so, we figured, you know, Liberty is one of the best defensive teams in the country, and we figured they were going to make it hard for us. So we designed a double high ball screen with our 4 and 5 setting the ball screens, and Carly coming off. And he, the ball screeners were supposed to slip, you know, just before he got to him, just to maybe create a little bit of a crease so that he could drive the ball. One of them wasn't exactly where he was supposed to be, so Carleek was screaming at him to get up there, and it was loud, obviously, and the, you know, clock was ticking down. And so as Carleek started to go, you know, that guy who was a little bit late, he got up there, and then he did his job and slipped. And but the defense did a good job of really shutting the drive down, and so Carleek just pulled up and hit a big-time shot.
We're talking to Mike Jones. You know, Mike, it was a huge shot, and maybe guys weren't necessarily where they were supposed to be or doing what they were supposed to do, or maybe it was one guy. But it seems to me when I watched that play, everybody seemed pretty calm on that play. How do you explain that in a moment that big, everybody was calm and not frantic?
Well, it's through experience for sure. You know, we've played so many close games over the last 2 years, and particularly this year. I think I saw a stat where 13 or 14 out of 20 of our wins were by single digits, and then like 4 out of 6 of the losses were by 1 or 2 possessions, something crazy like that. So we've been in that situation all year. It seemed like Groundhog Day, man. Every game was coming down to the wire. And, you know, our guys are used to it. You know, by trial and error, we failed some, and some we've had success. And that one, fortunately, we had some success.
Radford head coach Mike Jones joining us here in the jungle. Now, back in the preseason poll, you were picked to finish 7th in the conference. You end up finishing 2nd in the regular season. You win the conference tournament. Did you know that this team had something special in it even before the season started?
We did. We had a sense. You never know exactly how it's all going to come together, because the ultimate thing is to have a great team, not a great group of individuals. And so you don't know how that team is going to come together, how guys are going to get along, how they're going to, you know, buy into the plan that you have. But last summer, we had a couple of new additions in the middle of the summer, so we didn't really know our team until we got here for summer school in July. So once we, you know, got our roster set and we looked at the group, we thought we had a lot of different pieces that, you know, could help us. But the problem was we were deep. You know, it's a dangerous thing to have 13 scholarship guys that are ready to play, because they all want to play and they don't understand when they don't. So we figured depth was going to either be a positive or a negative. And at times during the year, it was a negative, but we were able to really turn that around and make it a positive.
We're talking to Mike Jones. You know, Mike, I want to ask you about your situation and your journey. Just make it about you for a minute, even if you don't want to, because it's been such an interesting journey and, in fact, a long road. You coached at Sidwell Friends. Then you were an assistant at your alma mater, Howard. Then Furman. Then Richmond. Then West Virginia. So I'm curious, what was life like when you were working those jobs? And then what was the dream? What was the vision you had for your future?
Well, first of all, I mean, God is has really been guiding my life, you know, for a very long time. It's just I'm happy to be along for the ride, and I always wanted to be a head coach. You know, my father played professional basketball, so it's been in my blood. I've been playing, you know, since I can remember, going to camp from 6 or 7 years old on. So, but when I got into coaching. I didn't know I wanted to be a coach, but when I jumped in there, I just loved it. My first team was a JV head coach at Sidwell Friends, which is a Quaker school, and their philosophy is participation, not competition, and that was certainly against my principles. I'm all about competition, and so we were able to have a lot of fun that year, and that just, you know, really lit the fire under me to want to be a coach. And, you know, fortunately along the way, man, I just got so lucky in so many situations working with people like Dennis Felton, who's now the head coach at Cleveland State. They almost went to the tournament here in his first year, went to the championship game. And then John Beilein and Larry Davis, who's associate head coach at Cincinnati. I've just been so fortunate to work with some awesome coaches, and they've really helped me become the coach I am today.
Mike Jones, my guest. Certainly nobody's surprised to see John Beilein back where he is. His teams always seem to be playing their best when it matters most. You were also an assistant at Georgia, and then when that came to an end, it looked like you might be unemployed. You were close to taking a job at Colgate, but then Shaka Smart reached out. What was your reaction when he contacted you?
It was crazy because one of the assistants on our staff at Georgia, he had reached out to Shaka first. And so out of respect to him, I didn't say anything to Shaka, even though we knew each other a little bit. And it ended up working out because the person that Shaka had hired initially for 3 months took a job at another high major school. And my wife and I, our family was on vacation at the beach, and I was, you know, we had those family discussions about, hey, where we're going, and really love Emmett Davis up at Colgate and his family. We were going to take that job, and then, you know, at the 11th hour, Shaka calls and said, hey, I think my assistant's going to leave. If he does, then, you know, I'm going to offer you the job, and I'm not going to talk to anybody else if you want it. And it was just divine intervention, I swear. And we took the job there and went to the Final Four 2 years later. So from fired 1 year to 2 years later, being in the Final Four and having this opportunity to coach at Radford.
Mike, you ripped my next question. I was going to say, what in the world was it like from being fired in 2009 to being in the Final Four 2 years later in 2011? What was that two-year ride like?
Man, it was the 3 months. So I was completely out of a job from April to June of 2009. And, you know, it was like when Forrest Gump is waiting for his son to come back from school. You know, I was just waiting for my kid to get off the bus and spending time with the family, which was great, but it was nerve-wracking because I was thinking, you know, nobody wants me as a coach. But, you know, a couple opportunities came through. I worked hard, went to some tournaments. A guy named Dave Tellup, who works for the Spurs now, was good friends with Shaka Smart, and he said, you know, one guy you may have overlooked is this guy, Mike Jones. He's at this tournament, and he's getting here at 8 in the morning, and he's not leaving until 11, and I don't even see guys in the business working that hard. So Dave gave me a great recommendation to Shaka, and then it just kind of fell into place with his assistant leaving and him asking me to join the staff there. And, man, that was a high point in my life, just being able to work with that staff. We had an unbelievable group of coaches that really helped me.
It's an amazing story. Radford head coach Mike Jones joining us. You get the opportunity at Radford. The team won just 5 games the year before. And then in a recent press conference, the win brought you to 115 and 115 in your time at Radford. Now, there are a lot of coaches who might claim that they don't know their record, but you're well aware of it. You said, quote, I've been fighting. When you get dropped off in the deep blue and you can see the surface, but you can't really get there, it feels great to get to even, end quote. did you always know that you would get to the surface and that you'd get to where you are right now?
I didn't know, but I believed. I believed that, you know, we could get to that point. I knew how much work it was going to take. You know, we, you know, the staff that I hired at first, you know, we knew how difficult that task was going to be. Kyle Getter, J.D. Byers, Aaron Marshall, and Chris Hawkins. We knew it was going to be a monumental task. And, you know, we lost 15 games in a row that first year. That was very difficult, but we persevered, and, you know, we kept building. And, you know, we got to a point where we thought we were pretty good and then kind of dipped back a little bit. But then, you know, the forces were in place and the work was being put in. And so we knew eventually we were going to get there. We just didn't know when. So it felt great to get to that point. I can't believe it was the last game, you know, of this season that we got to that point. But just proud of all the people and all the work that was put in to get to that point.
So, Mike, before you go, let me ask you this. The possibility exists that, and it's been suggested, that you might be one of the first four in Dayton. What's your reaction to that? I mean, would that be okay with you, or does that feel like a little bit of disrespect?
Well, there's no disrespect in being in the NCAA tournament at all. So, if you know, wherever they decide to send us and whoever they decide to match us up against, we're just so appreciative of that opportunity. The first four has got a, you know, pretty special place in my heart, because at VCU we were the first you know, team to win in the first four and go on, obviously, to the final four. So I got nothing but good things about Dayton and the people in Dayton and the being in the first four. So if that's where we go, then we'll be ecstatic about it.
And then finally, fair enough, you went to the tournament last year, but you were in the stands to watch your son Nate play for Bucknell. What was that like?
Oh, man, it just swelled my heart with pride, man. He got to get in the game. When I went up there, I wasn't sure if he was going to even play, and he ended up playing a lot of minutes against West Virginia, and their team is, you know, a very good team. So that was a moment of intense pride for my son and the work that he's put in to get in that program and do what he's doing.
You bet. Radford going to the NCAA tournament for the first time since 2009. Your official in. Now it's just a matter of where and when. Their head coach, Mike Jones, my guest. Mike, great to visit with you. It's a great story. Good luck. I will be watching, and really nice to have you here on the program.
Jim, thank you so much for having me on, man. I really appreciate it.
The way my life and my nights set up, the hours we put in, you know, how early I get up in the morning, I don't catch a lot of late night TV. Just sports, but not like the late night shows. I don't catch a lot of that, but it does catch me eventually, because the very best stuff is typically repurposed and repackaged as YouTube clips that make the rounds on social media the very next day. So what might be 36 hours old to a bunch of jobless heads who watch Fallon live every night is often news to me. I'm one of the last guys to hear it or see it. And pretty much everybody else who packs it in before midnight. So let's go back to Wednesday night. Granted, it is Friday, but go back to Wednesday night and The Tonight Show, when Jimmy Fallon introduced the musical act for that episode. And hold up for a minute. Generally on those shows, I'm more about the musical act than almost anything else. That's what I tune in for if I do tune in. Or if I'm looking for it after the fact, I'm looking for the musical act. And I was really curious to see who had Fallon or who Fallon had on Wednesday night.
Please welcome J.D. and the Straight Shot.
All right, so that's pretty funny, right? J.D. and the Straight Shot. I mean, if it's Fallon, a big-time show like that, I know I've heard of the band. But J.D. and the Straight Shot. It's a joke, right? I mean, Fallon, bro, the monologue is over, so why don't you just go ahead and bring out the real musicians? Because there's no way JD and the Straight Shot are booked on the legendary Tonight Show. It is the Tonight Show. And for those of you who do not know, JD is Knicks owner James Dolan. The Straight Shot is a five-person backing band who must be being held there against their will. They're probably hostages. How else would you explain how anybody could or would, I mean, who had any kind of professionalism or musical ability at all? How else could you explain five people being willing to stand behind that guy on the same stage and make music with him. And if you don't believe me, check out this felonious assault on your eardrums that Jimmy Fallon allowed to happen on his watch Wednesday night.
Wash away my troubles, wash away my pain, with the rain in Shambhala. Wash away my sorrow, wash away my shame, with the rain in Shambhala.
Those are the real musicians jumping in.
Everyone is kind.
That's JD.
On the road to Shambhala. Everyone
is
looking.
What kind of stones it takes to get up on stage and sing like that?
On the road to Shambhala.
My sincerest apologies to Daniel Moore, who wrote that song back in 1973. And a quick rest in peace to Shambhala, 1973 to 2018. I've got this sticker on the back of my car right now, in memoriam, in memory, Shambhala, beloved song, 1973 to 2018. Shambhala was just 45 years old when James Dolan ruthlessly took it out back and executed it, mafia-style execution, on Wednesday night. Yeah, look, I understand that music is a very subjective art form. Arguing about what's good and what's not is pointless, considering it's all based on taste. Lucky for us, there is no argument here, because that's just not music. That's some juxtaposition or juxtaposed billionaire take on a granola classic. That's Dave Matthews and Counting Crows, if neither were born with any shred of talent. That's the kind of song that makes you think that background checks ought to be required at Guitar Center before selling an acoustic to anybody wearing an ascot around their neck. There should be a 30-day waiting period before some rich guy's allowed to buy a guitar. No mythical Buddhist temple is going to wash away the shame of what I just heard. But I got to ask, I mean, Jimmy Fallon, that is such a talented guy. Fallon is awesome. Like, that's a great dude and a super talented guy. And I'm not even saying that it was entirely his decision, although it is his show and his name's on it. And believe me, he's got a say in anything that happens on that show, I have to imagine. In other words, if he didn't want that guy on his show, I would imagine that guy would not be on his show. Like, what did that cost? How many stacks did James Dolan drop off at Rockefeller Plaza for them to allow him to plug in a microphone and murder music in the first degree on The Tonight Show? Johnny Carson, rest his soul, is rolling in his grave right now. He's banging on the ceiling, of that coffin, trying to get out. He's trying to dig his way out. I mean, seriously, was every other band on planet Earth booked on Wednesday night? That is the only explanation possible outside of a massive payday. A massive payday. I mean, I can't imagine that the bookers on The Tonight Show did not prep up, because one single search of the internet of JD and the Straight Shot will populate a video from last summer where some guy in the crowd rips into Dolan so badly that they yanked him from the building.
Your singing voice leaves a lot to desire. You're a bad singer.
Don't quit your day job.
You're
right?
A bad singer.
This is terrible.
This is terrible.
I want my money back. Well, I want my money back. I made good money for these people.
I just want a refund.
I just want a refund. That's all I want. Who are you? How do I get a job singing for a band? His voice is terrible.
I'm serious.
His voice is so bad.
I mean, I listen to that heckle job. Like, he doesn't even know who the guy is. He doesn't even know who the guy is, and he just keeps saying it. Your singing voice is terrible. I want my money back. Your singing voice leaves a lot to be desired. You're a bad singer. This is terrible. I want my money back. Who are you? How did you get a job singing for a band? His voice is terrible. I'm serious. I just want my money back. His voice is so bad. You know, obviously, a few months later, it hasn't gotten any better. Not much has changed. You know what you should have done? You know what you should have done? You should have called my guys, my fam, Straightjacket, Killa the Hun, Casanova. Speaking of which, let me roll back their 19-year-old hype track so I can cleanse my brain of that sonic nightmare James Dolan just haunted all of us with. Alvin, please, the sooner the better.
In the scoreboard and rip floorboards and break backboards. Gangsta Hooper on a world tour. Barry Bones, known to smack up a clone off the dome. I get the last word like Jim Rome. I mean like Christine, I want my corner back. Her a gangsta. All you crumbs, catch a head slap. Turn the channel back. Why? I was watching that. Big boy, cold figure who be talking smack. The most hooks without no books. Leave your squad shook, deal with it, breaking you off. When the shots took no bricks, I be coming through in the clutch. It sounds like when I'm crossing you up, Jim Rome gonna bring it to your dome like Roy Jones. Bulldog and correspondence with the hotness. Don't even try it, son. I leave them tiresome. The lifest one like MJ and Iverson.
Out of the jungle comes a pimp in the box, putting down smack that'll make you rock. So whether you're rolling in your car, at work, or at home, turn on your dad, who you hear?
Jim Rome.
Out of the jungle comes a pimp in the box.
My guys, big boy cult figure talking smack. My guys, big love, Straightjacket, my man, Killa the Hun, Casanova, Keith, napping it out up above, Keith Loniker, looking down on the rest of us. Good job. What's up, fellas? Appreciate you still. Quick memo to Jimmy Kimmel, Conan, Myers, the rest of you hosting late night TV. Look for a do not book this man flyer in the mail this weekend with my return address on it. Make sure to display it where everybody can see it, because Fallon should have done to Dolan what Dolan did to Charles Oakley. Forcibly remove him from the building. My advice to the other guys. Y'all are doing really well. You're all very talented. Never let that guy in. Never let that guy in. Because you know he's going to go with Shambhala. And you know he broke out his very best. That was like his best. The worst thing ever was his very best.
I want my money back.
Yeah, right? Ian Rappaport is my guest. Ian, good to have you back. How are you?
What's going on, man? How are you?
Ian, I'm great. You're always busy this time of year. In fact, you're always busy pretty much year-round, but with the 2018 league year and free agency, Ian, beginning on Monday, what is life like for you right now?
It's being on the phone and checking text messages and writing notes and forgetting what I'm doing and doing a million different things. It's kind of fun. It's a little crazy, and it's going to be very busy.
It is. It's already that. So let me ask you this. Why don't we start with the Seahawks? They traded Michael Bennett to Philadelphia. Richard Sherman, Ian, says he's been released. So when the offseason's over and the season kicks off in week one, how different are the Seahawks going to look?
They're going to look a lot different, a lot younger, a lot cheaper, probably a little more athletic, probably not as tough, and younger. Did I mention younger?
You did.
That's definitely a theme here. And, you know, I think for the Seahawks, what they're kind of doing is going through what a lot of really good teams go through, which is we have a lot of really good players who all get new contracts who are expensive. And, you know, you can either do it two ways. You can, you know, sort of recover or rebuild on the fly, or you can do it all at once. And the Seahawks are going to do it all at once. I'm curious, you know, they do have a franchise quarterback. A lot of times that can, sort of cover up some of the woes. But Russell's going to have to be out of his mind to cover some of this stuff up.
Ian Rappaport joining us. You talk about them getting younger. Richard Sherman's about to turn 30. Not only turn 30, but he's coming off of a couple of Achilles injuries. What's the market look like for him, given his health and given his age?
Well, first of all, we're not going to know for a while because Sherman has not one but two Achilles recovering from surgery. So teams almost never sign, players who are not healthy. You know, you have to pass a physical to sign. And, you know, teams can sort of pass whoever they want. But they're always careful about giving millions of dollars to someone who's not healthy. So my guess is we probably find out in June. There's a couple interesting things here. I mean, if Sherman needs to break the bank, I think he will have a shot to do that. There will be teams who are not very good and want to pay him a lot of money. My best guess as to what he does is go and play for like a New England Patriots or the Saints or the Chargers or some team that's good where he probably won't get to make quite as much money. And of course he's negotiating for himself. He doesn't have an agent. So that sort of adds another wrinkle to it.
We're talking Ian Rappaport. One more thought about the Seahawks. Where does this leave Earl Thomas? I mean, is he going to be one of those guys who's shown the door, or could you see him staying where he is?
I see him staying where he is. I mean, look, the Seahawks are always open for business. So if somebody wants to trade, they will try to make a trade. It's really just a matter of price. Like if someone offers a first rounder for Earl Thomas, like my guess is they would probably do it. They believe they're going to keep him. They believe he's a big part of their plans. They don't want to trade him, all that stuff. I think it's going to be him and Bobby Wagner, kind of the middle of that defense, and they will kind of build around that.
Ian Rappaport's an NFL Network insider. Don't forget the NFL Network's NFL Free Agency Frenzy coverage kicks off Monday at 1 p.m. Eastern time. You know, Ian, it's no shock to see Aqib Talib move. We know that Denver was shopping him, but what was your reaction when you saw him go to the Rams?
That was sort of what I thought was going to happen, honestly, because he only really wanted to go to two places, the Patriots and the Rams. And, they had talks with the 49ers, but it didn't sound like Talib wanted to go there. He only wanted to go to the Patriots with Belichick or the Rams with Wade Phillips. And, you know, when you have a trade market, when you have two teams, so the Broncos, a lot of times teams need to release aging veterans. The Broncos didn't have to. You know, they were able to trade a fifth-round pick. It's pretty good, for an older player who's due a lot of money. So I actually thought they did well, and I think it's going to be a good fit, assuming, you know, they can keep Marcus Peters and Talib kind of headed in the right direction.
All right, so you get Talib, you get Marcus Peters, and they add Sam Shields, but they trade Robert Quinn and Alex Ogletree. So what do you think Wade Phillips and his defense are going to look like in 2018?
Well, I was talking to Wade in Indianapolis, and, you know, one of the things I was asking about Marcus Peters, and he's like, I love all my corners. And I think he has all the corners. They're going to let Trumaine Johnson go. You know, I talked to someone who watched Sam Shields work out, and they said he looked fantastic. So I think we'll see. He hasn't played in a couple of years, but, you know, health-wise, if he's good, he was a very good player, very, very good player. You got Talib, obviously. Now you got Marcus Peters. I mean, I would expect, a lot of interceptions and a lot of plays. I think it's going to kind of be fun to see.
I love it. I actually love the move. I understand that if you can get two guys, number one, if they're available, it's probably for a reason. If they're available for that price, it's probably another reason. But I love them taking a big swing like that. I love them being that aggressive coming off the year they had. Ian, what about Le'Veon Bell? Now, he has said that he won't sit out any games in 2018, I guess. How do you see his contract situation playing out? I mean, is it going to be really acrimonious, or maybe is it something whereby both sides like each other, they just have different numbers in mind?
I mean, I think the two sides are fine. It's just, a hard deal to do. First of all, everyone, he wants to be with the Steelers. They want to be with him long term, all that stuff. What I think the problem was is he didn't do a deal last year. You know, if he had done a 5-year, $60 million deal last year, $30 million over the first 2 years, that's a really good running back deal, and I think they would have been fine. It's kind of like Kirk Cousins. Like, once you get franchised twice, from a leverage perspective, you almost can't do a deal. I mean, it's really hard. Chiefs did one with Eric Berry, and it is insanely expensive for an older safety. it's just, it's really hard to do after you get franchised twice because the price tag is so high. So, you know, I think that's part of the problem with how they're actually going to work things out.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing, actually, that you and I got this far into this conversation without mentioning Kirk Cousins. So what's your sense of the market when it comes to Cousins? And then maybe additionally, when you see what John Elway did with Aqib Talib, he's clearing out some cap space. Do they have a legitimate look at him, or is it a two-horse race?
I think for Cousins, look, there's still four teams in it. I think we should not discount the Arizona Cardinals.
Okay.
But, you know, it's pretty clear now. The Minnesota Vikings have a really good shot at him, and I think there's a lot to like from both sides. They have a really good team. They just need a quarterback. He is going to get a lot of money from them, probably not the most money from them. If he's not looking for the most money ever, then I think that would make sense. If he just wants to break the bank, then it might be the Jets. But it's interesting because, you know, you have Case Keenum lurking. He's a good starting quarterback who took a team to the NFC title game. My guess is he's the number two guy and he signs right after. Or if they can figure it out, he could sign first from the team who knows they're not getting Cousins. That's going to be sort of the interesting just timing dynamic of it.
All right, so before I let you go, one last thought. What are other teams or other potential moves that you're keeping an eye on over the next few days?
I mean, everything in free agency, it's crazy. There'll be probably a couple more trades. It's all about the quarterbacks now to me. There'll be a couple big name players who get released. I think we'll probably try to keep an eye on that as well. But it's going to be wild the next week, I'll tell you that.
And this guy really doesn't wait. Rex in the ABQ. TGIF. The grind includes Friday. Rex, what's up?
Van Smack. How are you?
I'm great, Rex. How about you? You sound great.
Looks like the jungle needs a tiger alarm because the hype machine is cranked all the way up. Memo to all the valets and locker room attendants in Palm Harbor, Florida. If Big Cat wins, you will still not be getting a tip from Tiger this week. And to the waiter at Morton's, pray that Tiger and his crew doesn't get sat in your section either. Nothing is worse than "I don't tip on alcohol" guy. Speaking of Morton's, I took the old lady there last week for our anniversary. Check came. I said, screw it. It's a big night. Let's get dessert. So I got the molten chocolate lava cake. Had to order a side of insulin with it, though, because I could feel the diabetes setting in. Anyway, on the ride home, something happened. I didn't feel well, and not 10 seconds later, I got the squirts.
That's not a good call. No. You don't like that call.
I don't like that call. Not a very good call.
You know, the rather unfortunate thing about me being on television now, CBS Sports Network, is if you're watching this thing right now or you're watching it tonight on DVR, you can see my reaction. I mean, if I'm on radio, I can kind of feign my... I'm not even feigning it. I mean, I am generally indignant. But it's hard for me to sell my indignation when I'm laughing. And why am I laughing? It's not funny that a grown man just called and said that he had dinner at Morton's and it was the anniversary and thought, eh, screw it. I'll get the chocolate molten lava cake. And no sooner than I got into my car, 10 seconds later, Rome, I got the squirts. Hey, Rex, I'm not sure how old you are, but probably too old to be calling a nationally syndicated sports talk show and discussing the fact that you got the squirts. Come on, man. Diarrhea smack. Is that where you're going to go with my show on a Friday? Diarrhea smack. Hey, let me save the rest of you the trouble before you call me a hypocrite. And don't say, come on, Rome. It's not like you haven't been there yourself. Yeah, I was, all right? I didn't think I had been there, but Drew in West LA actually found audio of me covering a similar topic way back in the day.
Diarrhea is the great equalizer.
All right, I'll own it. I said it. I didn't think that I said it, but I did say it. And not only did I say it, not only did I utter the phrase, diarrhea is the great equalizer.
Diarrhea doesn't care who the hell you are.
I chased it with a take. I really did. That's what I meant by it's the great equalizer. It doesn't care who you are. It doesn't care how old you are. It doesn't care how young you are.
Or where you are.
It doesn't care where you are. It doesn't care how rich you are. It doesn't care how poor you are. It doesn't care where you were born, where
you're
from.
That's what makes you guys so dangerous.
It's what makes it so dangerous. It's the great equalizer. I see what you did there, Rex. You knew you'd get run, but you knew that I couldn't crack on you too hard when I had a similar take myself. But I had a similar take myself back in the day. Things that were okay then are no longer okay now. In other words, it's no longer okay to call it this radio show and go on about having the squirts. So also, at the same time, don't ask me why I ran that guy. Hey, Rome, why did you run that guy? That call was great, Rome. Put him in the smack-off. Rack the call. What's the matter with you, Rome? What's the matter with me? There's nothing wrong with me unless having the best possible show that I can have every single day is a problem for me. You're not making it better, Rex. You're hurting them, and you shouldn't be talking about the squirts on the radio. Man.
That's not helping kids. It's hurting them, Rome.
And you shouldn't be talking about the squirts on the radio, man. And Alvin. Hey, Alvin, would you grow the hell up? Wherever you... What was that, Alvin? You thought that you played that low enough so I couldn't hear it. But 8 zillion people listening could.
Yeah, dude, the idea was... I knew that, like, the listeners, they're into that. So the idea was to play it because I knew they'd like it. But at the same time, play it so it's not loud enough that you can hear it. You know, you ain't getting any younger, Van Smack. Your hearing's not what it used to be. I thought I could just slip that in there.
Hey, Alvin, if the whole point was to play it so I couldn't hear it, don't play it. I don't know, Alvin. You're feeling pretty good about yourself these days. You're full of yourself these days, Alvin. That whole TV thing, you're the last guy. You're the last guy behind that glass that I thought that the TV thing would go to your head. I knew the rest of the knuckleheads that they'd be infected by that. But you, dude, you used to be afraid of everything. Now you love everything. Now you're going with flatulence drops on my show.
I love it.
Let's get to the week that was. Alvy, is it time? Roll it. What's cracking? Welcome to the jungle. My name is Jim Rome. Hope you had a tremendous Monday. Nice to have you here. All right, week's off to a great start. I do want to start with the combine. It's a weird event. As good as Saquon Barkley was, and he was awesome, he was not the star of the weekend. That honor goes to Shaq Griffin. Yeah! He's a freaky athlete. He's a tremendous leader. And the fact that the guy ripped the entire combine, a combine that he didn't even get an invite to initially, is a joke.
Mark Andrews joining me in studio.
You know, Baker Mayfield is, you know, the best teammate I've ever had. There's just something special about him. He's got the it factor.
Please welcome Warren Beatty and Faye Dunaway.
That was the jungle's own Dallas Huff.
First of all, what up, Tim?
Front and center, suited and booted.
What were you doing there?
Clapping his ass off.
Could you pass that down to Kate Winslet?
In front of millions of people.
Mira Sorvino.
I look back on my life, there are a lot of things that I've really wanted. A new iPhone, hell, a new car. But I've never wanted anything badly enough to kick myself in the junk, much less kick myself in the junk many, many, many times.
Thank you, man. I was Ubering for the last 8 days straight on No Sleep, Sirius XM, Channel 201, pimping.
Cliff Averill is my guest. What's your reaction when you hear the possibility that they could trade Michael Bennett?
Bennett.
It's interesting. Sounds like it's an overhaul. And who knows? They might try to ship me out, too.
While many were worried about the chip dip, I was busy wrestling.
And she liked it. She always likes it. Because I wrestle. I wrestle good. I'm Josh in Detroit.
Email.
I believe Canelo. I've had some love from China, and it was tainted. Signed, Mark Almond. That is a first. Eric Berry's a 5-time Pro Bowler. Why is this happening to me? This isn't fair. Do you ever have those moments?
Pressure is a privilege, and you should want that pressure because it's going to bring the best out of you. I mean, every day is a blessing, so you got to pretty much treat it that way.
The 17th annual Arnold.
You bastard!
This guy is willing to explode his face in pursuit of a girl.
Someone. We do have a cleanup on our
Somebody
nine.
Get this dude a protein shake and some nose plugs. Robert Klemko. John Dorsey said, the door is open if another team wants to trade up for the number one pick. I mean...
No, actually, I think it's Twitter. I got to turn my notifications off.
Okay.
Very quick question. Do you know the difference between a vegetarian or vegan?
Just have a take and don't suck. Romy doesn't care what you eat.
All right, so let's do a little word association. I will say something, and you blurt out the first thing that comes to mind. Are you ready? Macaulay Culkin, adult alarm. Am I right? Am I right? It's a fun game, right?
I love my little dudes.
Great to see you in Charlotte. What's up, man? What are you doing here?
I live here.
Missed you, man. Great to have you back.
All right.
Ryan Reeves, my guest. You have one of the greatest goal horn impressions in the league.
I might wake up this whole hotel.
My man, give it a shot. That is incredible.
The fire department just showed up at the hotel.
Winona.
Colorado plays at 3:30 ET. What does that mean?
Eastern time.
Okay. On what station?
Email.
Hey, Winona. In your case, ET stands for elapsed time. Signed, G Reaper.
Who am I speaking to?
So much. Proud. Proud does not have five syllables. It was the echo. Unless that echo was 151 proof. Fabian.
Call me IA, my man, dig. You know. So, you know, the haters. But I am here, kind of. So, blah, 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 and that is that.
Are you kidding me?
I drive a 2011 Honda Accord, Rome. How am I supposed to get the jungle now?
Shaquem Griffin is my guest.
I want people to see me as a football player and not a guy who has one hand who can play football. No matter what it takes, I'm willing to show each and every team that I'm not a guy who just one hand who can play football. Yeah, I'm Shaquem Griffin who can play football.
Hey, you watch porn? Oh, yeah. Why? Because I want to fit in. Because I want to be one of the cool kids. I don't want to not fit in. I don't want them to not like me. I'm trying to be cool here.
With a guy.
Matt McMahon joining us.
How can you not love Ric Flair? Just pure entertainment.
The Ric Flair woo. Do you have one?
Go Racer.
New listener to the Jim Rome Show, trying to understand the lingo and the love fest that your fans have for you.
My buddy's name
your
is Jim
voice
Rome.
Is amazing.
Love you. Thanks,
digging
brother.
The vibe. My man, Dante.
Thank you.
I didn't feel well, and not 10 seconds later, I got the squirt.
Ah. 10 seconds later, Rome, I got the squirts. Alvin, grow the hell up.
Yeah, dude. I knew that. The listeners, they're into that.
Mike Jones, he joins us right now.
Hey, good morning. Is this the real Jim Rome?
Real my man, it is. That's is this awesome. The real Mike Jones? Jones? So what did he look like a monster? Or John Gruden being microwaved on high for 3 minutes?
This is a big deal.
He didn't give a damn about any of that. The road to
Shambhala. I want my money back.
Gravy.
Smoker Nation, don't at me. Not my fault that you're walking around with a catcher's mitt on your shoulders.
Man, we need to come out there, stop by the show, see what you have going on.
That stadium is not going to bench press
you
itself.
You have a great day if you want to, buddy.
It felt good to be back.
Jim, thank you so much for having me on.
Would I do it again?
So, you know,
all right. Okay.
Stop.
Good night now.
Yeah, so it's just like 50 drops in there that I want to talk about. My favorite things from the week. There it is. Enjoy your weekend, clones. I know I will. And then I'll be right back at you on Monday. Check you then. I'm out.